Welcome to the Wealthy, Wealthy, Wise podcast, where you will get to listen in on the thought-provoking conversations with countercultural business, financial, and money thought leaders, sharing their wisdom and insights with your host, Christina Wise. Christina Wise is a highly successful serial entrepreneur, real estate investor, best-selling author, millionaire business and money coach, and the founder of the Wealthy, Wealthy brand. Christina has mastered the money game, and now her mission is to help everyone willing to do the work win the money game too. If you are looking to upgrade your financial life, stop worrying about money, and start living the fulfilling life you deserve, strap in, take a deep breath, and get ready to learn. This podcast will change the way you think about business, money, and wealth. Let's get into it.
Welcome back. This is Christina Wise, your host. In this episode, I interview Mark Willis. Mark is a certified financial planner. He's a number one best-selling author of a finance book. He owns a financial services firm outside of Chicago, and his favorite topic is alternative investing, which means investing outside of the market. He gives different ideas for many different places one can start thinking about investing to really break open that there are so many places that we can place our money that we may not be aware of. He talks about how entrepreneurs should fire their banker. That really matches what I talk about when I say become your own banker. He shares what he means when he says go upstream financially. Go against what the masses are doing and what conventional finance is telling us. He shares a lot about different financial vehicles that one can put their money into. And we talk a lot about what's wrong with conventional finance and conventional retirement planning. He's a wealth of information. I really love this conversation. We really are aligned in the way we think about money, finance, and investing. I hope you enjoy my episode with Mark Willis. Mark, it's so good to be here with you today. Thank you for being on the Wealthy, Wealthy, Wise podcast. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks, Christina, for having me on.
All right. Well, to just jump in, please introduce yourself and tell everyone listening just a little bit about you and what brought us to meet today.
Well, again, my name's Mark Willis. I'm a certified financial planner. I own a financial firm here in the city of Chicago. We work with clients that want to grow their wealth in ways that are sane and predictable and help them become their own source of financing. I believe that, you know, a lot of traditional financial planning is insane. And by giving folks tools and resources and a mindset to think sane about their money actually makes a real difference in their relationships, how they sleep at night, what choices they can make. And it really does matter where you put your money.
It really does matter. And that's why I'm really excited to talk to you today. And really, the purpose of this show is to really educate and let people know that there are a lot more options than what most people are aware of. Because we've really been tricked to think that there's just one path, and that path really is pretty risky, like you said, probably to use the word insane. And at the end of the day, people are abdicating their money, throwing it out there and crossing their fingers that these advisors, bankers, or whoever are going to magically make it so that they're going to have enough money at some future period of their life, which is probably not the case. So anyway, let's chat in. There's a couple things that I just loved when I researched you and looked at your work and how you talk about it. Things that resonated with me are very similar to some of the things that I say on a regular basis that I've never really heard before. So I thought that was really cool. And one thing you said is that I don't know exactly how you put it, but the way I phrase it is I teach to become your own banker. And I think you said fire your banker. And that same concept is, no, we're giving our money, our interest, everything. We're making the bankers wealthy. And we're robbing ourselves because we're not thinking like the banker. So I loved it that you said something similar. So would you go deeper into that? What do you mean by fire your banker?
Well, so I finished a book recently. It was called Debt, the First 5,000 Years. And that kind of says it all. We have lived in a world where it's just presumed that the banks and credit cards and finance companies should somehow have a right to, on average, Christina, the average American spends about a third of their income on interest payments, not just paying down the principal, but interest payments. So your mortgage, your car payments, your student loans, your credit cards, that's a big chunk of one's money. I mean, if time is money, that's a third of my day gone to the banks. And so it's no wonder that they have the biggest buildings in town. And it's no wonder that we've got The most, wealthy among us, you might say, are those that own and control the flow of money. Banking is a function of one's life. It doesn't have to be inside of a banking building, but the function of one's banking in life could be done, in-house. So we like to talk about reclaiming that banking function and controlling the environment where your money lives.
Absolutely. And the idea is that part of what I say too is that versus being the borrower, be the lender. Like, that's the way bankers think. And we receive the interest, quit paying the interest. But talk a little bit more about that when you're talking about reclaiming. Like, what does that look like exactly?
Yeah, well, so again, traditional financial planners, CFPs, me being one of them, are usually trained to tell our clients to pack as much money into something that we can't access or control for 30 or 40 years, like a 401k, for example. And then we have to spend quite a bit of debt interest to buy our house, to buy our cars, all the while being sort of reprimanded anytime we feel like we should get access to our own money. Taxes and penalties being first and foremost among them. Anytime I want to get access to a 401k, to my 401k, I have to pay taxes and oftentimes an early withdrawal penalty. So, it's really about the traditional retirement plans are really designed to get you from retirement to dead without running out of money. And that's really all traditional retirement planning advisors, and I use those words specifically, are all trained to do. Now, I'll also just bring up, Christina, that there is no compensation package for the investment advisors and retirement planning advisors to help you spend that income. It's all about accumulating that income for 30 or 40 years. And yeah, don't worry. Go ahead and get the bank loan. Go ahead and get the car loan. Go ahead and get the student loan. Let's just put it all on the risk of Wall Street. So I'm not only carrying the risk of Wall Street on my shoulders, but now I've also got the burden of all this debt. So do you think that might impact families? Do you think that might impact marriages or our health? I bet, it impacts all of those things and more. So we really describe having a circle of life with our clients. Why would we only design a financial plan that goes from retirement to dead? Let's figure out the best package and the best strategies to reclaim the banking function in our life and bank on ourselves to buy our cars, to buy our vacations, to pay off all of our other debts. Why don't I buy back all that debt that I have with everybody else and truly become my own source of financing? So you can fire your banker and become your own source of financing. That's really what we teach and share with folks as much as we can get the word out.
Yeah, and even, first of all, typically when I see a CFP behind somebody's name, it's a big X, because it's just, they are. I mean, CFP is all trained about a very specific model for what. It's all about this old school, traditional, out of date, outdated retirement planning based on days when people maybe retired at 62 and died at 68 or, and it's not set up for today by any close. So when I saw CFP and then I saw your work, I thought, well, that's interesting. I really want to talk to him because he's really defined what he's probably been taught. And I would compare it a little bit to a lot of my friends in the health world, and I'm wealthy, so health being your body being your number one asset. So I talk both sides. But so many of my doctor friends, they started in the traditional medicine world and then they've moved maybe more to the functional and integrative. And it's a big move because they're very different trainings and schools of thoughts and ways to advise and prescribe. So anyway, I thought that with you, I thought, all right, let's talk about this. So what else, like what way you practice now, how are you practicing differently than what maybe traditionally or conventionally you were trained?
Well, that's a great way to put it.
Because the CFP is rigorous, it's not easy to get. So when you have a CFP behind your name, whether it's the right or wrong school of thought, it's a rigorous, very few people in your industry have a CFP. So it's a big deal, but
it
still
did.
To kind of go against that would be a difficult thing to do.
It was a tall order for sure. It took us, my wife and I say it because she was right there alongside me, helping me every step of the way, but it did take us about 3.5 years to get the credentials. But I was classically trained in Wall Street planning. And, my wife and I left three private school degrees with us and six figures of student loan debt. And we graduated in the midst of the Great Recession, 2008, with no job and no plan to pay off our debt. And that's what kind of got me started in financial planning, was my own personal drive and desire to not, you know, spend the next 20 years of my life under the thumb of these student loans. They were like a mortgage payment. They truly were. And, you know, we joke about saying, you know, we would eat rice and beans, and on Fridays we'd have beans and rice, and that was sort of, you know, a special night. But we really had no best practices, and no one had really taught us. It was so phenomenal to me that you can go through college and even graduate school without any kind of financial education. So it was in 2008 and 9 and 10 that I was working for a CPA in the midst of the Great Recession, listening to her. She was an incredible CPA investment advisor, but she would make these calls as the Great Recession was just unraveling people's portfolios and saying, hey, I'm sorry, but Mr. Client, Mrs. Client, but I know you're 62 years old and I know you just wanted to retire in 2 or 3 years, but unfortunately, I just lost you half your life savings. That was a wake-up call. It was like watching this house of cards that I hoped to put my career to, you know, as a financial planner, just come tumbling down right as I was getting into the business, so to speak. And so, yeah, it really kind of forced me to look at the financial environment where we keep our money, because, again, where you keep your money makes it act different. And that seems like such a simple statement, Christina, but it's amazing to me how rare or how very, I guess, infrequent I meet someone who has really thought about, what do I want my money to do for me? What are the characteristics and attributes that I consider my money to have? And then go about finding financial strategies and concepts and financial vehicles that help you accomplish those things without taking a bunch of unnecessary risk. And so that's really what kind of got us off the rails with CFP in the classic sense. I do still, you know, consider myself a part of that community. I do still, I mean, every client we sit down with, we do the planning process and listen to what their needs are and develop a plan and help them take steps toward those ends. But it doesn't, I mean, I guess one thing I just say to your listeners is, it's not like Moses came down from the mountain and on his tablets of stone said, you know, thou must invest in Wall Street to retire well. It just, where is that written? It's not written on anything I've read. And the more I look at the results of actual investors over the last 30 years, we have not done so well as a nation of speculators. That's a bit about my story and sort of what kind of got us interested in alternative ways of meeting our financial milestones as a financial firm.
I love that. So let's break this down in a few different pieces. But one, I would love for you to talk a little bit about debt. And same thing, I've stated the statistic, like, hello, 1/3 of people's income is just to the interest.
Yeah.
To the interest. And, you know, we live in this world of debt where we can't imagine a home without a mortgage, a car without a car payment, a credit card without a balance, and an education without a student loan. And most families I talk to, because I'm in the consulting and financial coaching business, and then, you know, when they get to the place of investing, you know, they work with real experts like you. But it's just the understanding, like, this debt is real. It's costing you. It's robbing you of a financial future in freedom. Yet there's this misunderstanding in my belief is that, you know, we're just, debt's the lifestyle we have. And as long as we're putting money in this 401k or something, assuming we're doing that, we're going to be fine at this elusive thing called retirement, which, what the F is that anyway?
Like, right.
Do we really retire these days? And, and can that money carry on for 30 or 40 years when we want to live a long, healthy life? So anyway, what do you say about debt? What are the dangers first? And to if you can just really help this, like, to make the point. And then two, how do we, like, you guys paid off six-figure student loans. What's the methodology from your perspective to have a strategy for eliminating that, to be out of the shackles and reduce the 1/3 of my income goes towards this thing called interest?
Well, I think we've made the point that, you know, the debt is a problem. And I would say too, that as we're paying on debt, we're also not preparing for our future or our children's future. I mean, 52% of households are not going to be able to maintain their current lifestyle in retirement, according to the, you know, research center at Boston College. And I read the other day that the Federal Reserve study recently came out and said that almost half of all Americans don't even have $400 saved, that they would have to go into debt or sell something if they had an emergency of just $400. So we are a very illiquid nation. We're no longer a nation of savers, but we are a nation of debtors. You know, so it's almost like we've left that part of ourselves back in the 1940s. I mean, we used to be a nation of savers. We used to save, according to the U.S. Commerce Bureau, in the 1940s, if you had a dollar, roughly 37 cents of it would be saved somewhere. Now, roughly 37 cents goes to interest. So we really swapped it from saving to being in debt. But I believe that there is something better than being in debt, certainly. But I believe that there's something even better than paying cash, and that is being the banker. You know, if I could literally become my own source of financing and pay myself the interest that I was currently throwing down the drain to Visa, MasterCard, you know, Sallie Mae, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, whoever else, if I could pay myself the interest that was currently going to these banks, that is a rate of return that I can't beat in the market, you know? And it gives me the assurance that that money is going to be protected and growing for me. It's the difference of, you know, being a debtor to being a saver, and then taking it even a step further to being a wealth accumulator. I mean, by stepping into that role and to sit on the other side of the banker's desk, you can literally become wealthy just by buying things and then preparing for your next purchase by paying yourself some interest. And there's specific strategies we teach our clients how to do. But you're right, Christina, it comes down to mindset. And does the average person even know that this is possible? You know, and you know, if you don't hear about this strategy, you know, how could you possibly make this a part of your financial life? You know, it does take changing the way you think about money to be able to do this sort of thing.
Absolutely. Well, so how did you and your wife pay off so much debt so quickly?
Well, it took us some time. It still did. You know, nothing was overnight for sure. We used a very interesting strategy that someone had shown us. And again, it was becoming our own banker takes a tool, not just a concept, not just a mindset. It takes tools to be able to do. So we had to find something that would grow for us, that would be accessible and liquid for us. We needed something that wouldn't tie up our money in a 401k for 20 or 30 years. We needed something that would be somehow able to keep growing even when we used the money to pay off our debts. So, you know, we'd been reared on the debt snowball method to pay off our student loans. And maybe some of your listeners have heard of that, where you just pay on the smallest debt, pay cash for your smallest debt. And we were following that method when we came out of school. That became our lifestyle, really. We were overpaying on all of our debts. The debt minimums were like $800 a month, and we were trying to kill it with $2,000, $3,000 a month monthly payments. For a young couple, that was tough to do, but we were just crushing that debt until we realized, Christina, that the money that we were throwing at our debt was gone forever, but also gone was all that money might have grown to had we invested the money instead. And so opportunity cost became our worst enemy. All of a sudden, we realized that, you know, we had just thrown away, you know, five figures of money, and we still had a lump sum left when we discovered that this was happening. But we realized, we calculated, here's how much we would have had in savings at retirement if we had invested that money instead. And we really saw and learned the true cost of a dollar. It was about that time that someone came to me and said, he was a mentor of mine from college, and I was talking to him about the troubles we were having with paying off our debts. And he said, you know, Mark, you know, I realize that you're a big fan of Dave Ramsey and some of the things that he teaches. And I was. I listened to him every day, and that was sort of my brandy. It was every single day, you know. And he said, Mark, is it possible that Dave Ramsey could be wrong about something? And my jaw dropped, and I couldn't believe it. And I'd never even considered that before. And so he ended up telling us a little bit about this idea of using, of all things, an asset that has grown in value for over 100 years, 150 years, without losing money to the market's volatility. It's a form of high cash value life insurance that you can use to pay off debts or buy things. It's a big pool of liquid money. And I honestly, I just went stone cold at that point. My brow furrowed. I got really defensive, and I, of course, had to, you know, defend my man, Dave Ramsey, and said, no, that can't be true. He says whole life is always a bad place to put your money, until I did some more digging and research. And this is, you know, a CFP who's supposed to know about insurance and investments and estate planning. And we had gone over whole life, but it was not something we'd really looked into deeply. But the more my wife and I looked into it, and we then again started to these policies ourselves, and we started to use them not only to pay off our debts, but, you know, to do other things too, to buy our cars. We went on a month-long vacation, you know, to Hawaii, and we used our policy to do all those things. And meanwhile, the policies continued to grow, even on that money we had borrowed, to pay off the debt or go on that trip. And for us, that was like the best of both worlds. It allowed us to become our own banker and allowed us to continue to grow that money for our future, even as we were paying off our debts or buying the things we needed today. So it wasn't just the financial tool of this very modern kind of unique form of whole life, which is very different than what Dave Ramsey talks about, but it was something that also came with the mindset shift that we could control the environment where our money lives. And that those two things combined, the mindset and the tool, really made all the difference for us.
Well, I just love you. I mean, I'm a big proponent of whole life. It's a big part of my portfolio. And of course, I didn't know you were going to say that. So everybody listening in, that's part of what I want everyone to listen is there's these alternatives, and whole life is poo-pooed in the market. And it's you know, most traditional advisors will stay away. But it's just funny. Everyone I bring to the table, without knowing you're going to say that, we're all saying the same thing. So
yeah.
Awesome. Cool. And again, it's working with traditional planners. They're not going to bring up this thing called whole life insurance and, you know, right. how many benefits it has outside of the death benefits and the tax strategies and, you know, any mm-hmm. number of things that, you know, like I said, those benefits. So awesome. Thank you for saying that. And if you're helping someone build out, so, and that's more on the cash savings side, it allows us to be our own banker. We can borrow against it. We can buy things with that. And some of the, like what you said, I thought that's a great idea for paying off student loans. Never even would have thought of that. So brilliant. What else, like when you're building out a portfolio, so that would be one piece of the pie. What else are you looking at alternatively? That's not, you know, what your traditional say, hey, just go max out your 401k or do yep. indexes or, you know, whatever they might be saying.
Well, again, we do believe in having a balanced portfolio. And what that means to us is centered around financial sanity. So again, if you could imagine in your mind's eye, sort of an upside down pyramid or triangle, and most people's financial life is an upside down triangle, balancing almost like a topsy-turvy top, you know, a little bit of cash at the very bottom portion of that upside down triangle. And we're all living under that triangle, you know, just sort of hoping and praying it doesn't fall over on us. You know, so we all have just such little liquidity is the fancy word here. Mm-hmm. But again, if the Federal Reserve study is even half true, then that means, you know, every other person we walk by has less than $400 in their pocket to come up with cash for an emergency. We really believe that liquidity and accessibility, not just for emergencies, but for investment opportunities, makes all the sense in the world. So, you know, we do have, you know, if you can flip that triangle right side up and build a solid base of liquid, predictable, accessible cash that is getting a decent rate of return and has some tax advantages, then you can do quite a bit of good, you know, in the investment space. And invest the money you can afford to lose. You know, so I think it's fun to, you know, really look at a client's risk tolerance, obviously, before making any recommendations. But in general, what if you had, you know, 10% of your savings going toward safe, predictable, short-term needs? You know, like Christmas. Hey, you know what? That comes every year. That wedding anniversary. Hey, wow! It happens to come every year too. Surprise, surprise. And then those another 10% of your savings might go to medium-term needs, your kid's college, you know, the next real estate purchase you might want to make. And then the third top of the financial triangle might be speculative investments, everything from commodities to, anything else that you, peer-to-peer lending, anything that is alternative in the way that you can grow your money, but also protect it too. So we really try to build that financial triangle on a solid platform. And we are a full financial firm here, so we kind of recommend all things. And unfortunately, so many people who come to us do have the bulk of their net worth tied up in their home and a 401k or IRA. And as we kind of get into their needs and their wants, we just ask them. We have a whole matrix of questions. We're like, what would you want if you were Pope of your own money for the day? And you could, wave a magic wand and your money could do anything. What sort of things would you want it to do? And wouldn't you know, I've never heard anyone describe a 401k in the answer to that question. Most people think taxes are going up. Well, 401ks are going to get taxed in the future. Most people need accessible money, both for emergencies and if they see that great duplex that they want to purchase or that storage space that they want to purchase. So it does come down to starting with the baseline of where your money could be and what it could do for you. That's a generic answer to a specific, each person would have a specific answer to that question. What would kind of the portfolio need to look like? It can look like a lot of things as you go to the top of that financial pyramid.
Yeah, I like the pyramid. That's a really great visual to it. And same thing that, I'm just talking about cash, and we're sweeping and we're using a certain pound of cash, and it's all a cash game. We have to live on cash and cash flow. You can't pay you can't buy your groceries with your house or your investment property or your 401k. Like, it's the cash flow that is the game, and it's all about income, and at some point replacing working income with asset income or some form of different cash flow. And same thing, it's like when I teach my ESI method, for example, earn, spend, and invest, it's like, how do we accumulate cash? One, the investment bucket, where a certain amount of that cash is going towards some sort of equity or cash flowing assets. And there are many options today that people aren't aware of. That's why I love interviewing those of you that are in that business that bring those opportunities to people. And there's the cash in our kind of emergency funds and funds like the same thing to pay for college and or to go on vacation and those things. Like, but cash is not talked about. Like you said, I really love how you say it. It used to be 37% people saved as cash, and now it's 30 plus percent of interest. So I totally agree with everything you're saying. When it comes to, let's say, a little bit more, because alternatively, there's lots of different options. What are some of your recommendations as a CFP when it comes to a little bit more traditional? Like, are you recommending a certain amount, like max out something like a self-directed IRA or things that do have some tax benefits? We don't want to put all of our money into these assets that we can't touch. But there are some retirement benefits or tax benefits if you do a Roth IRA, for example, where you pay taxes later. Do you factor those into the mix?
Yes. So as for Roth IRAs, I've been cooled to them lately for a number of reasons. One, we can only put in, what is it now, $6,000 a year? That's not going to solve our retirement crisis. And once you make above, for singles, it's only $132,000. For married couples, it's $186,000. That's getting easier and easier for some folks to do. And once you make above that income, you can't even contribute to Roth IRAs. Now, again, the whole life contracts, just so you know, is sort of sometimes referred to as a rich person's Roth because there is no income phase out. You can put make $10 million and put in $2 million a year into a whole life policy. So look up rich person's Roth. There's another CFP actually that writes some articles on that topic. David Ray is his name, RAE. But as far as more traditional, and when I would recommend a qualified plan like a 401k or IRA, or I would say a cash balance plan is really great for any business owner that's listening. If you're a business owner that's listening and you're toward the, if you've got, let's say you're 62, 63, and you've got maybe 5 or 10 years to go, I wouldn't recommend you put it in the market with that kind of time horizon. But you can do a cash balance plan and put $200,000+ a year, age weighted, and still keep it as a safe harbor with your employees, keeping it tax deferred. If you've not saved very much and you're coming on 62, 63 years old, and you know for a fact that you're going to be in a much lower income level in just a few years, that's the perfect time to do a qualified plan. That's when the money is going to be taxed in the future when you take the money out. For about everybody else, and that was how the 401k was originally conceived, by the way. I mean, the 401k, again, was not created in the first week of creation. It really didn't even have its start until 1981. And it was really designed at first, Christina, for the wealthy. And it was only sort of an additional on top of annuities and pensions that they might already have. So, you know, I would say let's go back to that original use of 401ks, even IRAs, and especially cash balance plans. Those are great strategies for folks that are making 600 grand a year right now and needs to defer some of that, and they have nothing saved or very little retirement saved, because in just a few years, they'll be making a whole lot less, and that'll actually be a tax savings. For just about all other listeners, to put money into a tax-deferred vehicle like a 401k, only to be taxed at a higher rate later on in retirement, that doesn't make any sense. Even if taxes are just 1% higher, and we all now know that there's a deadline for when taxes will go up, and that's January 1st, 2026. That's coming up on just 6 years now. So if we could just, you know, kind of think about, well, what's going to happen to our money that we're putting into a 401k, and do we want to pay taxes on our money, more taxes than necessary? And I would say no. You know, I certainly want to pay my taxes, but I don't want to necessarily leave them a tip.
That's good, exactly. And what do you say with somebody that maybe has money in a 401k, and it's not with the current company they're with, but it's just money sitting there that they don't know what to, they don't even realize that there are options, or maybe they could do something with those money sitting there?
Yeah, for those that do, and again, most of our clients do come with a 401k or an IRA that they don't really know what to do with. There are some strategies you can do with your old 401k money. If you don't necessarily like the 1% or 2% assets under management fee that's coming out of your accounts every week or every month, and you do want some kind of predictable growth, you know, tracking an index, one of the strategies we've recently found is what we call the indexed, fixed indexed annuities, which go into IRAs. Those are phenomenal. Kind of walk through what these do. So if you put in, let's say you've got $300,000 in a 401k from your old job, and right now it's bouncing around in the stock market, and we just recently went through, at the time of this recording, a few months ago, we had a terrible December and a terrible Q4 for the stock market. And again, it rebounds and it'll fall again. And the question is, what's it doing when you listen to this episode? Nobody knows. That's the problem. When you put money into a fixed indexed annuity, it's still tax deferred. So it's just a rollover from your 401k to an IRA. And it's a simple piece of paper transfer. But now it's inside of a protected vehicle. And it's no longer directly invested in the stock market, let's say. And Christina, when you let that money grow and appreciate inside that annuity, here's some fascinating insights onto what happens. So let's say this year, the stock market went up 10%. We don't know, but let's just say that it did. In that year, you might earn 8% in that fixed index annuity. So the insurance company that gave you that annuity would take the first 2%, let's say, and you would get to keep the remaining 8%. Does that make sense so far?
Mm-hmm.
So next year, and it's locked in. You cannot lose that money once it's given to you. So if you have the money going in, it grew by 8%. That 8% is yours for life. The next year, let's say the market drops 20%. The indexed annuity would be protected at 0%. You have a floor where you do not lose money when the market crashes. That's incredible. So everyone else is, you know, not looking at their 401k and, you know, or they're freaking out about what the Dow Jones is saying every night on the evening news. Meanwhile, your money is protected and you still earn the 8% you made last year. I can't overemphasize how much better your life is when you're not hoping and praying that the stock market won't crash right before you need that money. There are plenty of bad annuities out there, just like there's plenty of bad whole life insurance out there. Just like there's plenty of bad real estate to get into, or plenty of bad, you know, other things to put your money into. But for the discerning listener, for someone who's ready to do their research and think a little bit different, you can find some incredible strategies that can help you sleep better at night and give you the growth you're looking for your retirement.
Right on. And again, annuities are thrown under the bus with whole life and some of these that can be really great options. So I love that you said that. And it's a little piece of guaranteed income that's what we're looking for, if at all possible, is, you know, as much guarantee that's as possible. So what would you say to someone that, let's say, is 48 to 52, they really haven't been saving, investing at all, and they finally hit this place in life, a high income earner, but they finally hit this oh shit moment of this realization of, I didn't think I was going to get to this age, this fast. I've been pushing off this and living and thinking I'll do it someday in the future. The future's here, and now I'm scared. I don't know what to do. I finally realize, all right, time might be running out a little bit. What's your advice there? Because that's a lot of my people that come to me is they've got debt. They realize they don't have any assets. There's this retirement word that's looking like it's pretty close in the future, and they don't know where to start.
Boy, yeah, and those are many of the people I work with as well. So I would say that let's make a distinction between the word save and invest. Let's do that, because I think we've conflated the two terms over the last few decades. Let's save the money we cannot afford to lose. Let's only invest money we can afford to lose. I do believe in the power of investing, and I do think that it's awesome and fun to put money to work and watch it grow for us in tremendous ways. But, you know, if you're at that point and you've got 15, 20 years to go, every dollar you set aside has got to do multiple jobs at once, because we've got to really catch up now. So I would say, again, let's put aside the funds. Let's make a decision. What are we able to live without? And how can we live more abundantly with the dollars we do have? If we're chasing rate of return, with putting our money in riskier assets, I've never seen that play out well. And I would just say that Wall Street is one of the least efficient ways to save for your future. If you think about like the history of where you can keep money, it really is just three places. You got real estate. I mean, clear back to the pyramids. You got businesses where you can own a business but not necessarily run it. And then you have paper wealth, which is, you know, what Wall Street is. And Wall Street is typically the least efficient way to really generate real wealth. This is according to the Dalbar study that comes out each year. Dalbar is an independent research firm that just does research on how real investors are doing. And the average investor in mutual funds over the last 30 years, so that includes the 90s and the Great Recession, but also the last 10 years of this incredible bull market we've been in, the average investor in mutual funds has only done about 3.6% over a 30-year period. Isn't that nuts? And then when it comes to taking the money out, we're only told we can spend 4% or sometimes down to 2% of our money each year. So if you've got $1 million in a 401k, that money can only come to you at about $28,000 a year safely without running out of money. And then don't forget, that is taxable. So you might be looking at, you know, $1,800 a month on $1 million portfolio. So there are much more efficient ways. So if I met someone who was in their late 40s, early 50s, I would say let's start with just flooding our liquidity buckets, the bottom of our financial pyramid. And that might mean a couple of whole life policies that we start using to buy our cars, because we got a lot of things to do. We got probably kids that need to go to college. We got probably aging parents that need some help. So having those dollars still growing, and I don't know if I mentioned this clearly earlier, but when you access the cash value for a loan, let's say, from these policies, Christina, the policy continues to pay you a dividend as if you had not taken the money out. So it's letting our money do two things at once. Like I said earlier, we need our money to be doing multiple jobs. So I would probably look at possibly doing some policies that are maximizing the cash value of the whole life policy. That's going to be kind of your Roth tax diversified bucket there as well. So it's liquid, it's guaranteed, and it's tax-free in retirement if we take the money out correctly, of course, under current law, right? And then we would start looking at longer-term growth patterns with any kind of IRA money that we had. We might look at doing a self-directed IRA. We might start looking at some real estate to provide some cash flow in retirement. And you know, if you could have a little fun with peer-to-peer lending sites, or you know, you could look at other dividend-yielding stock to pay you an income. That's the kind of the money that you don't mind if it goes away. I mean, even GE just went down to a penny on their dividend. So we have to be really clear and careful about, again, what do we want our money to do for us, and what risks are on our shoulders, what costs are on our shoulders when we choose certain financial vehicles. I don't know if that answers your question.
It does, and it's just so well said, and thank you for sharing all that. And again, I'm just in complete agreement. So something that I wrote down here is, you said something about upstream financially. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's just, again, a mindset. When you start your financial life, when my wife and I started our financial lives, we were, you know, at the baseline tributaries of our financial life. But constantly going upstream means learning to go against the flow, all right? So, you know, if we're salmon in this river of life, you know, let's move upstream. Sometimes we have to go against the herd. You know, we have to go against the flow. We say around our house, if you're following the herd, you're going to get slaughtered. So, you know, let's go upstream financially. What does the person just beyond where we are today think about their financial life? Some people have said, poor people plan for Saturday night, rich people plan for four generations. So we want to go to that place where we're thinking about our great-grandchildren's financial destiny. And what will that be for them relative to what it was for us? What sort of things can we teach my three-year-old daughter to make sure that she has the next leg up toward her financial goals and dreams? You know, if we follow the herd, you know, it's going to lead us down over the waterfalls. So going upstream financially is all about taking those steps. So it might be something as simple as going from a renter to a home buyer, from a home buyer to a real estate investor, from a real estate investor to a private money lender, where you're literally the mortgage company for everybody else. So that's just one pathway you could take to go upstream financially.
That's great. So one more question here is, what do you advise, for example? So again, what I do is I help people learn how to move their money, master their money, plan their money. Like you said, you even used the word giving a dollar, every dollar a job. I teach the exact same things. And get people prepared and have a full financial plan and system and goals, knowing how much is enough, what are the numbers, you know, the stuff that we've never been taught to do, so that when they have all this put together and they know what monies and these dreams and, you know, ideas, then they can go and say, all right, I'm an educated person. This is my money. I am my own banker. I'm not afraid of this anymore. I've been saving cash. I've reduced my spending. I've changed my mindset. So now I have this money. Now I can go to Mark, for example, and say, all right, based on these different things, what would be your type of advice versus just abdicating and trusting the planners that they're going to do something for our money, that we're going to have enough. So because that's what I do, people that work with me to build their financial system and their plan and their structure, I talk to a lot of people. So there's, and all these people I talk to, there's a lot of common scenarios. They're coming to me because they have money. They're in an undesirable financial situation and they know that they need to do something differently. They just don't know how. So what I see on a pretty regular basis is obviously a lot of debt, not enough saved and invest, like we've already talked about. But another thing is student loans. I mean, it's shocking to me, really, like the amount of student loan debt, and my kids are graduated from college. They both left college without any debt. I didn't have any debt because obviously it was planned for. And what a gift to them that they're out of college with zero debt when all their friends have tens of thousands of dollars of debt. Talk about a little bit of a competitive advantage there.
Yeah.
But regardless, it's not about me. It's just the mindset. But when I see all the student loan debt, people aren't planning for education, and education has just gotten so expensive. And these student loans are precarious. Like, you can't get out of them. We don't even know how dangerous they are. And, you know, you can't bankrupt. You can't do other things with them that you can with other types of debt. So what advice do you give to people that are younger couples that maybe have young children? You know, this college thing, if you believe in college, that you want your kids to get some sort of college education. What is the advice that we need to start doing now so that those coming behind us these kids aren't going to have coming out of college with so much debt. The parents aren't mortgaging and getting second mortgages on their house and getting, you know, student loan debt as well.
Wow. You said so much there, but I'm trying to think where to start. You know, it could be the strategy of what is the kind of person we want to create for our children, in our children. It might not be that college is the best fit for everybody. You know, we're living in a world where that might go away someday. However, it would be great to have the option to go to college if that is still something your child wants to do. So we have a two-pronged approach here. We actually have some college funding specialists here at our firm. And what they'll do is they'll sit down and look over someone's expected family contribution limits. And we'll look at, you know, where is the money today? Is it all in the house? Is it in 401ks? Is it in brokerage accounts? If it's in any of those places and more, 401ks, it will penalize how much the children are able to get in terms of scholarships and grants. There are only a few places you can park money where it is not a part of the FAFSA form. So we help reposition folks' funds into places that get it off the radar and into places that, you know, make you look poorer for when the kid applies for college. In addition to that, we work with the child to help them think about what do they want to go to school for. You know, the average student stays for more than 5 years now. If we can get that down to 4 or 3.5, that's tens of thousands of dollars for mom and dad and the child that they didn't have to spend. You can also up your ACT and SAT. You can do appeals processes and negotiate with the colleges. It's not common knowledge, but you can negotiate with the schools and have them fighting for your tuition dollars. So those are just some various ways you might put your minds to work before we start the process. And it really should start, you know, when they, when they are born. But if not before, especially by freshman year of high school, that should be something that the parents and the child sit down with a competent advisor to really figure out, you know, what do we want your life after high school to look like? I've had a couple of folks, one right there in Austin, a great friend of mine, who just let her son not necessarily go to college. He decided he wanted to start a business with dad as his education. And they are doing phenomenal. And, you know, I don't know what my daughter might want to do, but I want to have my money in a place where I can gift her those funds to help her with a down payment on a house or going to college or, you know, starting a business. And again, if it's in a 529 plan or something, it's only earmarked for college. Can't really do anything else with those dollars. So once again, we're back to where we put our money makes it do different things. And is it sane to earmark dollars in the stock market that are only for education? If we could put our money somewhere else and let it do all those things, business, down payment, a wedding, because those aren't cheap. You know that, Christina. So, you know, letting that money do multiple jobs at once, I believe, is the sane way to go rather than, again, following the herd and doing things that are just plain insane.
Got it. That's awesome. You have been amazing. Thank you so much. I wrap all my podcasts with one final question, and pretty much the nature of all my conversations is we do a lot of myth busting and trying to break old mindset and thinking and, you know, just outdated dogma for that matter. But Is there any myth that you'd like to bust publicly? Just something that you want to scream from the mountaintop and say, dude, that's just not true.
You know, this is going to sound a little nerdy at first, but I think this will be helpful. And I also wanted to be sure to tell your listeners about a resource I'd love to give them if they'd be open to that. So don't let me forget to bring that up after. But so imagine that it's the myth of average rates of return. And this is something that's so pervasive in the classic financial planning world, because mutual funds are allowed to advertise their average rate of return. So over the last decade, the best mutual fund averaged 18% a year. That's not too bad, right? Until you realize the average investor in that mutual fund lost 11% per year in the same fund. So how is that possible, right? Okay, so follow me on this. I'll do a few numbers very quickly. Let's say that you put $10,000 into some sort of account. And let's say that I was doing some great work in investing for you, and I doubled your money that year. So we went from 10,000 to 20,000 in year one. Does that make sense so far? Mm-hmm. We doubled the money, so that's a positive 100% return. In year two, I'm sorry, but I just lost half your money. So negative 50%, we went from 20,000 back down to $10,000, lost half your money. It's 2 years later. You started with 10,000, you ended with 10,000, but I gave you an average rate of return of 25%. Plus 100 minus 50 divided by 2 is 25. That's the average return. But did you feel any wealthier as a result? Of course not, right? So the myth of average returns is the myth that really lures us into the market. As I said earlier, the real investor return over the last 30 years is more like 3% in the stock market. So whatever your investment advisor is telling you, ask him or her for the real rate of return, or you could also call it the compound annual growth rate, and see if they even know what you're talking about, because that's the true return on the cash. So anyway, that's more nerdy maybe than you were looking for, Christina, but I think that's so huge. And we're lured into believing that we're all doing 12% a year in our mutual funds when it's just not true.
Wow, that's huge. Well, thank you so much. And again, it's just bringing new awareness, and you've been a wealth of information, and I'm really grateful for your time. And just thank you for being just so open with your knowledge and what you share. So thank you very much. Thanks for being here today.
Absolutely. And I want to just briefly mention, if possible, we have a podcast that we do each week on Not Your Average Financial Podcast is the name of the show. Speaking of not averages. And if anyone wants to connect with us after this to learn more, we have a little schedule a meeting link. And I'd be happy to send you a copy of our book, free of charge, compliments of Christina. So I think the website is notyouraveragefinancialpodcast.com. And happy to send you our book. It's called The Secret to Lifetime Financial Security. Happy to send you that copy if folks want to learn more.
Well, great. We'll put all of that in the show notes and make it really easy for everybody to link up with you. I'd love a copy of your book. So I know there's more for me to learn, and I've learned things by our conversation today. So again, thank you so much for your time today.
Likewise. Thank you, Christina.
You're welcome.
If you're inspired by today's show and you would like to learn more about my money coaching, here's what I need you to do. Head over to Christina.com/call. That's KRISSTINA.com/call, and book an appointment to speak with me. In less than 30 minutes, we will get absolutely clear on why you're not earning enough no matter how hard you work, why you can never get ahead no matter how much you earn, and what you need to know in order to finally have the time and money freedom you're working so hard for. Remember, you're not alone. 95% of Americans are one life event away from financial crisis. I will be the first person to teach you why this is the case and how to be in the other 5% that has no fear around money. No one can do this alone. You need expert help. I've helped everyone from modest earning professionals to those earning 8 figures per year get off the financial hamster wheel and finally win the money game. I look forward to helping you too. Head over to Christina.com/call and book your call with me today. I'm Christina Wise. Thank you for spending your valuable attention with me today. We will meet again soon.